This is Creepy and Geeky, a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Welcome to Creepy and Geeky. I'm your host, Robert, and on today's episode, we're talking about the epilogue movie of a sort to phase two of the MCU, Ant-Man. Joining me for this episode is my daughter, Katrina. Welcome back to the show, Katrina.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you. All right. So we're just going to jump right into this. This may be a somewhat on the shorter side, but, you know, keeping on. You know, with the topic of Ant-Man. So we'll see how it goes. So this is the final movie of phase two. Like I said, it's sort of an epilogue, you know, not really, because it's just setting up Ant-Man. Has nothing to do with anything that's come before it. So it's just his movie. It's just weirdly tacked on to the end of phase two instead of being rolled into phase three for some reason. But this is our first introduction to the character and Paul Rudd as Scott Lang, this version of Ant-Man. I love Paul Rudd. I've loved Paul Rudd for a long time. I think he's great. He's an excellent actor, super funny. When I heard he was cast, I was like, this is great. This is perfect. I'm glad he wasn't being cast as Hank Pym, but as Scott Lang. Because that's the better role in that. And so that's what, you know, I want to go into this a little bit though, too, because, you know, Hank Pym, obviously you find out in this movie, he's the original Ant-Man. His wife, Janet, was the Wasp. And so we don't get much of their past. We get a little bit, just that they were, agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Or sort of, you know, he was a scientist with S.H.I.E.L.D. and, you know, working on his own project and worked with them on, you know, missions for everything. And so, so it's interesting to kind of skip all of that stuff because the original Ant-Man and the Wasp were founding members of the Avengers. And so when you take that into account and the fact that we didn't really get them until now after the second Avengers movie. And even then they are, you know, we're not even encountering Janet much at all. We just get a little bit of her past, how she quote unquote died. And just, so it's a little funky, but I appreciate what they did with it. And I think, starting off with, Scott Lang was just really, really cool. I like that aspect of it. What'd you think, Katrina?
So when we first watched Ant-Man in the theaters, he became like one of my favorite characters.
Right.
In Marvel. And I don't think I had a favorite before then. Like I don't
probably
remember
not
really liking a character that much, but I always liked Paul Rudd. Like, you would show Paul Rudd movies to me growing up.
Yeah.
And so I liked him as an actor. So seeing him in Ant-Man was really fun. And the movie's fun. And it's like, it's very like, I don't want to say like childish, but it's kind of like immature in a way. Like, it doesn't have that, like, mature feeling that, like, the Captain America movies have or the Iron Man movies have. Like, it's a lot more comedic, especially with actors like Michael Peña. Like, that adding that to the comedic aspect of the film was really good. I like Ant-Man. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
It kind of breaks, like, I think it can be kind of in the same vein as like Guardians, but it's not as comedic as Guardians though. Like, I feel like Guardians is more comedic than Ant-Man is in some parts.
I you know, it it can be. I think they're both equally kind of that, you know, they're
yeah, you might be funny. Right. I think I'm just like
funny when they need to be and serious when they need to be.
Yeah. So, but I think they kind of go hand in hand with the kind of more immature side of Marvel.
right.
Which is
say immature,
I don't know what else to call it, the more
you know, less serious. Yeah, the less serious side. You know, there's gotta be a word for not so serious. They're just having more fun, you know, with the material. But no, this is an interesting aspect of this movie, though, too, is that it was originally supposed to be directed by Edgar Wright, the director of Shaun of the Dead and Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And so you can see throughout this, his script was still used, at least in part. And you can still see aspects of what he would have probably done in this, especially specifically with Michael Peña's character. And when they're telling the story, whenever he's like, you know, going through all the, you know, this person told me this and I was talking to this person like that. It's very much a, like, especially with the quick cuts and stuff that, you know, Edgar Wright is well known for. So I appreciated that they kept some of that tone still in there. The new director on it, which his name is escaping me at the moment, and I'm going to look it up real quick. Peyton Reed. Thank you. I was just got it. So Peyton Reed is the one who took over, and he's done every Ant-Man movie since. And so he does a good job. I'm not going to say that, you know, he didn't do a good job at all. He did. He did a great job. Ant-Man is high up there in terms of, like, all of the Ant-Man movies are high up there in terms of the movies that I enjoy most from the MCU, just because of that fun aspect that you mentioned, because it's not super serious all the time. Don't get me wrong. I like the super serious sometimes, but I do appreciate.
They fit the characters that they're like doing the movies for, which is good. Right. But we do need some more, like, aha funny moments when you're watching Marvel movies. It can't all just be kind of like, I hate you, let's fight bad guy. Whoa, whoa. Like,
well, I mean, Avengers, you know,
like,
but I mean, you know, having Paul Rudd as your lead obviously is, you know, that he comes from that comedy background. He hasn't mm-hmm. done, like, very much in the world of action stuff. I think he did a couple of movies where he tried to kind of break into more serious or actiony type of roles, but he wasn't very successful at them. So, you know, he stuck to the comedy, which is something that he's really, really good at. And yeah, I've shown you some of his movies, especially like Role Models and I Love You, Man. Yeah. So Katrina was mimicking Slap at the Bass. So
I mentioned that at work like 2 days ago. Like,
did they understand your reference?
I don't think so.
That's funny. Yeah, right. No. So it's this is a fun movie. I love Paul Rudd in this. Like I said, I think he's great. Like you said, Michael Peña. The crew is generally pretty good. I like Michael Peña, of course. I like David Dasmalchian. I don't care too much about, I think it's T.I. Yeah, T.I. He's okay, but he's kind of, I don't know, bland.
I definitely, you know, think they could have written those side characters a little bit more. Maybe they were kind of just there.
Well, I mean, like, they were there just to serve his story.
Yeah.
Really. They were just there to round out the crew, because it was mostly Paul Rudd and Michael Peña, you know? Yeah. And so, but, you know, we also get Michael Douglas as the original Ant-Man, Hank Pym, and we get his daughter, Hope Van Dyne, played by Evangeline Lilly. And then Scott's ex-wife, played by one of my favorite actresses of all time, Judy Greer. And then Bobby Cannavale plays her husband. He's kind of hit or miss with me. I'm not a huge fan of his in general. I could take him or leave him, but he does good in this one. And let's see. And Corey Stahl plays forgetting his name now. The bad guy. Darren Cross. So I will shore that up. But yeah, so
hold on. Yeah. I was trying to say I kept going da 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 because I knew his name started with a D. And I was trying to help you, but I was muted because I was finishing my fries. So anyways.
All right, cutting that part. All right. All right. But yeah, no. So Darren Cross, so Corey Stahl does a good job at playing him. And he is one of those villains that I like too. Like, well, I like redeemable villains or not redeemable villains, but villains who you can sympathize with. You can understand like their positions, like somebody like Killmonger or Namor. You can understand their motivations and why they're doing what they're doing. Maybe not exactly how they're doing it, but they're the meaning behind it. Mm-hmm. But I really do enjoy the characters like Darren Cross or Kang or the High Evolutionary. These characters, because even Thanos, you can say is a sympathetic villain in a way, because you can understand his reasoning to a point, because you know he feels like everything's overpopulated and he wants to reduce the population just to help the universe, you know, not, you know, die early or whatever. So, but you know, those other characters, Darren Cross, Kang, the High Evolutionary, those kind of villains are always great because they're just bad to be bad, you know, for whatever mm-hmm. reasons they're bad, they're just bad and they don't apologize for it.
I think it's interesting in this movie that like Darren Cross is like the only one in that entire company that's like deemed the villain, and all the workers who were helping him, who were doing that kind of stuff, aren't really like, they're not mentioned and they're not like included in the whole like he's doing a terrible thing.
Well, because most of those people are just doing their job. They don't understand what he's doing. They probably didn't even understand that he was going to sell it to Hydra there at the end. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, he's, you know,
that was
a lot
like
of times,
all I could think about was like the workers bringing in the goats and like stuff. Like,
yeah, but that, I mean, that happens all the time. Animal experimentation, people don't turn a blind eye to that stuff all the time. You know, it's not good, you know, but you know, you like that's general workplace stuff. So, I mean, yeah, you can question their morals on it, but you know, they weren't necessarily like bad guy level like he was. You know, he
I
was
guess
really
that's
out
true.
To,
I don't know. I felt like they had more of a part in it, like looking back on the movie, than I guess they did. I don't know. Maybe my memory's skewed.
But yeah, no, it's an interesting movie because we got Scott. He comes out of jail, like he's getting out of jail after a couple of years. I don't know. But that's the thing too. Scott's like a Robin Hood like criminal. He's not necessarily like stealing to enrich himself. He was stealing to help other people, and he was stealing mm-hmm. back from the corporation that stole from its employees and such first. So when it came down to it, like, you know, when Hank recruited him, he was like, you know, this is somebody who's a good thief, but it is doing it for the right reasons. So that's what's interesting about this in this way too. This is a guy who, you know, like I said before, with like Killmonger or something else, you know, Paul Rudd could easily become a villain who's got good motivations for it, but he's doing it for the, like, he's doing it for the right reasons, but still being a bad guy. But, you know, luckily, you know, he really is a good guy underneath it all.
I mean, and, there's a moment there at the end where Michael Peña is like, are we the good guys? And Scott's like, yeah, we're the good guys. We're the good guys. And so it's like there's that moment of like moral, like, oh, I guess we're the good guys now, which is an interesting turnaround for Scott, because he's always been put the label on that he's the bad guy and he's a bad dad. He's a bad husband. Like he's a bad person. And then with what Hank Pym let him do with Ant-Man, he realizes that he's actually a good person and that everyone else is a douchebag.
Right. Well, so I want to get into this a little bit too about being the bad dad thing and everything. It frustrates me in this movie that that his ex-wife treats him like he's this scumbag criminal that, you know, is not a good father or anything. And so it won't even let him come see his daughter on her birthday. Like, he has to crash her birthday party. And I'm like, that's not cool. Like, it's like, I get that you want him to, you know, make something better with his life and everything like that, but he needs that motivation.
He's at least wanting to be a part of his daughter's life, yeah. Which is not what you can say for a lot of people who are actually going through like what Scott went through, and like it's hard to like. Also, I feel like because her fucking new husband's a cop, like that might also play a part into it, that this right. cop guy has told her that Scott is a bad person because he commits crimes. Maybe he's gotten into her head about it, because even the daughter asked the mom, like, is dad a bad person? And the reason right. why she asked that is because she keeps hearing people who are her stepdad's friends or her stepdad's yeah. colleagues. That's what she hears.
Right.
And
but she knows, but underneath it all, she knows her dad's not bad.
Yeah.
She knows that he's a good guy.
Exactly. And the mom's like, he's not a bad person. He just makes bad decisions. I don't know if she says that in the movie, but I think that's the point
right.
of like what she responded with.
Right.
So, well, or like he's just mistakes or something.
Yeah. And, but that's what I'm saying though. Like, if he had done something where he'd hurt people mm-hmm. or he had done something that was like
endangering.
He was stealing, well, or that he was like scamming like innocent people or something like that, I could understand that. But like, he burgled a corporation to give back money to the people. And so he's, like I said before, he's like a Robin Hood type. And so, like, you know, it literally, like, you know, the best kind of crime you could commit is to actually help people rather than hurting them. And so that's where it just kind of frustrates me. It's like, I don't know. It just seems like a weird thing to be like, you know, like making him not be able to see his daughter. He's obviously a loving dad and just wants to be able to be around her and see her and watch her grow and everything. And that gives him good motivation. And yes, you know, he goes back and he's like, okay, well, this is all the stuff I got to do to, you know, and then I can see her in like a year. Like, and that's just like, that's hard. Like, he's not gonna be able to see her for a long time until he makes enough money to, and that's why he ends up slipping back into this. That's why he ends up going, okay, yeah. Well, now I've got to do a crime. And that's what ends up happening to a lot of people who come out of jail and everything, is they don't get opportunities and
they don't have a support system.
They don't have a support system. Yeah.
Around them that supports them not committing those crimes. It's people right. who are in the same situation as them, because that's who you bond with, is people who have similar experiences. So of course you're going to find people who are going to egg you on when
right.
you don't want to be egged on, but you end up slipping into that anyways, because the people who don't egg you on don't want you around.
Right. And but, you know, it's, you know, so I think that, you know, it sucks that that's how he's treated by her. And like you said, you know, maybe it's because of the cop, you know, husband, now that, you know, she's just feeling like she's got to do that. She's got to keep that separation and everything like that, because he's filling her head with stuff like that. And it's just unfortunate that aspect of it was really that kind of one of the only things that really bothered me about the movie, was just that aspect of it. And obviously, you know, they needed that to give him the motivation to go back to steal in the first place. I mean, obviously that was the whole reason behind it. But it was still just like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
But anyway, but you know, he goes back, he does the job to burgle this house. and you know, that's supposed to have a safe full of money, that he's told by his friend Michael Pena. And and then they break in and they find the Ant-Man suit, which he doesn't know about, you know, that it just looks like he thinks it's a motorcycle racing suit. So, but then
my thing is, like, what kind of motorcycle suit looks like that? Like, you have to be some kind of stupid to think that looks like a motorcycle suit.
No, that, I mean, if you've seen a motorcycle suit, you would it looks similar to a motorcycle suit, so I could understand that. And it's got a helmet, like a motorcycle helmet, so I could understand.
My biggest thing is that the helmet doesn't look like a motorcycle helmet. It looks like a superhero helmet, and he knows there's superheroes. So why, like, I don't know. That bothered me a lot. That bothered me when I first watched it, when I was fucking 13. And that bothered me now. I think it's a little silly.
Yeah. So. Well, it is what it is. It doesn't look like a superhero suit. You know, it doesn't look like something like technologically advanced helmet or anything like that.
Doesn't look like a motorcycle helmet. So you could put two and two together that maybe the whole thing is in a motorcycle suit, but you know what, whatever. I'm gonna let it go.
Anyway, so I do like the special effects in this, of the shrinking, and then like of him being in like small in the big world and stuff. They do that very well. I appreciated all of that. You know, part of it's obviously digital, but you know, some of it's camera trickery. So, you know, it's a, you know, but I don't even know where I was going with that. But it's a, you know, it's just a fun movie. I think it's, you know, it helps. Like, I think Guardians showed that you can have a good movie that's got humor in it. And I think that they were continuing with that, you know, along those lines with Edgar Wright's take on it. And I guess Edgar Wright, you know, going back to that, he wanted to do things in a certain way and Marvel didn't want to do them in that way. And so that's how he ended up choosing to quit. And as much as it's a bummer, because I would love to see his full realized version of that, I think that what we got is a pretty good version. I think he put enough of a stamp on the character and the storyline that it continues into every successive appearance.
I think that a lot of the Scotland. Heart of Ant-Man came from that. So
yeah. But yeah, but it's a lot of fun. Like I said, Darren Cross is a, you know, despicable villain. He just wants to, you know, he finds out about the whole Ant-Man process and is trying to, you know, use it for his own. And to, like we said before, he's trying to create a suit that he can sell, like a miniaturizing suit that he can sell to, the highest bidder, who turns out to be, Hydra. Like a faction of Hydra, even though at that point Hydra's in pieces, because that's after the Winter Soldier. So it's interesting. I think that he's a good villain. I think that, you know, he doesn't wow me or anything. And in the comic books, it's interesting too, because Hank Pym took on three different identities, throughout the course of his, tenure as a superhero. He was Ant-Man, and then not too long afterward, he became Giant Man, which we see a version of that. Giant Ant-Man. And then he became a character called Goliath, which also had growing ability instead of shrinking ability. And then his final version was Yellowjacket.
So I mean, he technically was actually, Ant-Man does have growing ability.
He does. Yeah. Right. And then. But yeah, no, he was actually the original Yellow Jacket himself. Yellow Jacket was not a villain, for the most part, we'll say. When he was Yellow Jacket, Hank Pym was suffering from some mental instability, and he turned out to be kind of a douchebag guy who ended up slapping his wife. And so he, you know, but I kind of like that they change that. They make it not so like they like Hank Pym in this is obviously like a rough around the edges kind of guy and everything, but he's not as unstable. And, you know, he obviously cares for his wife and kid and everything. And so it's nice to see that kind of tempered a little bit in this movie as well. So, and I think Michael Douglas does a great job at playing Hank Pym. It's great to see him. I've never been a huge fan of Michael Douglas, but case by case basis, he's really good. And I really like him in these movies as Hank Pym. So, I've been talking a lot, Katrina. What else you got? You wanted to talk about this movie.
Hope's a fun character. I like her. I think she's got a interesting attitude towards things with like her kind of feuding with her dad at the beginning and the kind of like ego battle that is going on between her and Darren is also interesting. I don't remember. Was Hope chosen as something and Darren wasn't, and that's why he was mad at Hank Pym? Did he choose his daughter over Darren, or did he
Darren just was upset because Hank chose Darren as like his protege. Mm-hmm. And then didn't tell him a lot of stuff, and Darren felt like he just wasn't being told enough or whatever, that, you know, he thought he was the heir apparent to him. Then took that to the logical extreme of that he became the head of Pym Tech and then was going to change the name to Cross Tech or whatever.
Yeah, so, I saw that. Industries or whatever.
Yeah. So he, yeah, so he just, you know, and that's what Hank says, like at one point too. He's like, you know, Darren asks him, he's like, "What did you see in me?" And he goes, "I saw a little too much of myself." Yeah. And so, you know, and so Darren takes it to that extreme, to, like I said, with that kind of that mental instability, and that's why he becomes Yellow Jacket in this rather than Pym. So it's a. You know, I like the character of Hope. I'm not a fan of Evangeline Lilly. I never been a big fan of hers, even when she was on Lost. And then, yeah.
Oh my God, she was on Lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Kate was kind of in Lost. She's kind of an character. Thumbs down. But
I'm glad you said that, since you were just doing that on screen. And like, nobody could tell
Kate's
what you were
whole
doing.
Persona and. Kate's whole character on Lost is just built to be a love interest of the other male characters, and I hate to say that, but she has no substantial like character other than to be fought over by men, and it's frustrating because she could be such a good character, and that's in part on the writing, but she also just plays that character. And I think that other female characters in Lost are better and should have been the main person besides her. But yeah, I did not put that together that she was Kate from Lost. I knew she looked familiar. I just could not put it together. That's crazy.
Yeah, but no, yeah. And she's
good in Ant-Man. Like, she's
okay, but like, I really would have liked a better actress. In my opinion.
I still think that a lot of, I don't know if it's the writing or if it's how she plays the character or what, but like, I don't know. Just from what I've seen her do, it's not like
Yeah.
He's not my favorite.
No, I think it has a lot to do with her. Like I've never been a big fan of hers. I don't, you know.
She just plays a very meh character in like a bunch of stuff.
Personally, she's and personally, you know, in her own personal life and everything like that, she's not the greatest person on top of that either. She's really? Like, yeah, she was supporting like the Canadian anti-vax trucker convoy thing. So
cool.
But all that being aside, I just don't think she does, like, you know, just as the character and everything else like that, I think it could have been much better played by another actress. But it is what it is. We got who we got. So, you know, it's that part of it kind of drags for me. But, you know, all of the stuff with Paul Rudd is just great. The whole training montage. Him learning how to use the Ant-Man suit and everything with that just is great. So
I love the mini scenes and like the bathtub and the pipes and the suitcase and the helicopter.
Yeah.
All of those things are like really fun. Oh, also, like, didn't he like he went into something? I guess he went into the yellow jacket suit and was like tearing things apart. Like, I thought that was cool too.
Yeah, like, he was yeah.
So there's a lot of those scenes where he's like shrunk down and going inside of things that I think they did a good job at like doing that stuff.
So there's a funny moment too where he, you know, he falls off of something. I think he falls off the flying ant or whatever like that and lands on the top of a car, all tiny, you know, and there's a black guy inside. And then, you know, he just makes a ping sound and then he grows big and then it like crumples in. The guy's like, what is going on? That guy is I believe now I'm gonna look it up again because I'm going to missay who it is otherwise. Yeah, that guy is Garrett Morris, who portrayed a version of Ant-Man in a Saturday Night Live sketch in the 70s.
That's
funny.
So SNL's that old? Damn.
Oh yeah. No, I think it came out the year. I'm pretty sure it came out either the year before or the year I was born. So
Jesus, you're old.
Yes, I'm very old.
Yeah, there's a lot of scenes where like things are like small and like
it came out in 1975, so the year after.
They have these like really big noises of like the small stuff, and then it's like nothing in like actuality. Like I think there's a scene where like, I don't know what it is, but something gets thrown at Ant-Man and it's like a really big thing. And then like they zoom out and it's just like a clink. And then like also they fall into a pool and it's like a
bloop. Yeah.
and then the fucking Thomas the Tank Engine gets like thrown and it's like, and then they zoom out to just like just landing clatters on the windowsill, like clattering, like just like. And it's so funny. I think those scenes are like some of my favorite scenes in the whole movie.
Because it just depends on your perspective, you know. Yeah. Like that stuff's, you know, huge and making a lot of sounds and you know, it's scary when it's at that size, but you zoom out to regular size and it's like, oh, that's really tiny. No, so again, that's like really great with how
also the keychain tank comedy is funny too. The keychain tank is good too. And then how it had still had the keychain ring like attached to it. So
when I started reading comic books, back in the like late 80s, when I started really reading them, I was reading Avengers West Coast, which was a side offshoot of the regular Avengers title. And Hank Pym was a member of the team at that point. But he was not Ant-Man or anything like that. He was just himself. And he wore kind of like this jumpsuit that he had various pockets on. And in those pockets, he would have little, you know, miniaturized things, weapons, a ship that would carry him around or whatever like that. And he would use his powers. And in the comic books, he's been exposed to the Pym particles, so he can just do it without, like, he doesn't have to be in a suit or anything like that.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to do that. He just shrinks by thinking about it. And so So that's what he does at that point. He's not shrinking or growing himself. He's shrinking and growing other things that are in his hands. And so I always thought that was an interesting thing.
I think you gave me the comics. Like you had me. Sorry, let me restart so I don't. I read some of those before, and
yeah,
I think I remember.
It was part of the Scarlet Witch stuff I sent you.
Yeah. So yeah. I like Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
I still need to read those. They're on my school computer. I think I have it on there.
Good. Yeah, no, it was a fun run of comic books. But that's kind of how I got introduced to Hank Pym myself. And so, finding out about Ant-Man and all the other various versions of him and all the other stuff he did, like I kind of missed that era when he was doing that. Instead of the shrinking and growing, he was, shrinking and growing other things. And so they kind of got away from that. And he doesn't do that as much anymore. Currently in the comic books, he's actually been melded with Ultron and is out somewhere in the universe. So, in the comic books, he's the one who created Ultron, not Tony Stark
Bruce Banner.
Yeah. So yeah, he created Ultron. So yeah. So that's again, another frustrating thing about that is like, okay, well, because they hadn't introduced Hank Pym yet in the movies, that they had to figure out a different way to create Ultron in the movies. So, which is fine. They came up with an interesting, just as good way of going about that without going the traditional route.
One thing I thought was cool at the beginning of the movie, I didn't realize that Peggy Carter was there.
Oh yeah.
She plays like an older version of Peggy Carter because it's like Hank Pym when he's like 30.
It's the
40.
80s. Yeah.
So that was interesting. That was just one thing. I just wanted to mention.
Tony's dad was there too.
Yeah. I didn't want to mention that because I didn't remember if he was Tony's dad or not, but thank you. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. Tony's dad, Peggy, because Tony and Peggy were two of the people who started, or not Tony, Howard and Peggy were two of the people who started S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. So, yep. So, yeah. But yeah, it's and the guy who, Hank ends up smashing his nose in at that point, comes back later as the guy who's trying to broker the deal between Darren and the Hydra people. So he's obviously turned out to be a bad guy. So, but it's just a really fun movie. I think that, there's a lot going for it. The humor is really good. The action's really good. It's one of those movies that like it didn't do as well, like compared to a lot of the other movies and the Ant-Man movies in general don't do as well as the other movies in the MCU. But it's weird that they don't because they're so good. They're so fun. Every one of them.
This last one was good. This last one was great. Like I really liked that last one, but no one went to see it. it bombed at the box office.
It didn't bomb. It did okay. It did well
Marvel
enough.
A Marvel movie.
And it got a lot of bad reviews. A lot of people were talking crap about it, which is not.
I don't
understand.
It did between, I think, like Thor, Love and Thunder, and Doctor Strange. I think it met like in the middle of both of those. But Doctor Strange was like on the middle end of like Marvel movies that have come out recently. And then Thor, Love and Thunder did not.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because like it was an okay movie. Like people could have gone and see it, but I guess people saw the reviews and were just like, oh, wait.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully people will come back around on it and they'll, realize it was actually a good movie. I can understand some of the criticisms about it. Some, not most. But, the teach their own. And I'll get into that more in the future when I go into that episode. But yeah, no, but this first movie is really fun. I love the interaction between him and his daughter. I love that, he brings her that creepy doll for her birthday and she goes, oh, it's so ugly. I love it. You know, it's just, you know, that,
cute
that's
cute moment.
Yeah. You know, and then later on, she's, you know, taking it to bed. And like, her mom's like, are you sure you don't want something else? And she's like, no, I want this. You know, and then there's another moment then when she's like, are you trying to find my dad? To her stepdad. And he's like, yeah, we're just trying to, you know, make sure he's safe or whatever. She goes, hope you don't catch him.
Yeah.
So, you know, so she did a really good job in these first two movies. They ended up going with a different actress for the third movie, Catherine Newton.
She plays a good, like, older version of her.
Yeah. And so it's just, you know, it, like, in this movie, she's really good actress. She's really good at doing the things that, you know, are required of her. So that's cool.
I think it's nice that they can use the blip to, like, kind of explain, like, age differences and stuff between actors, which is like, it's an easy cop out.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's fun. Yeah.
Broken record saying it's a good movie.
Yeah, no, I say that a lot. I know.
Finish the episode.
But no, it's it, but I just, because I'll say it and then I'll think of something else that, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, duh.
Yeah.
But, you know, and as much as I don't like, you know, his ex-wife's whole thing about keeping him away from her daughter and everything, his daughter, and everything, that, you know, I love Judy Greer as an actress. So I was really good, really glad to see her, even in this small role, which I think she deserves a much bigger role. But, you know, I think she does a good job in this as well as in the next one. So, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think that's all I have to say. Do you have anything else you want to mention about it?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll bring us to the end of that. Why don't you let people know where they can find you online?
So you can go to my Twitter. It is RCKMNKY. And on there, I have a pinned tweet that has the rest of my socials.
All right. Cool, cool. All right. Well, thank you again for joining me.
Thank you.
And we'll have you on again pretty soon, I think.
Yay.
Thanks again to Katrina for joining me. Next week, my son Harrison returns to the show for the finale of my Trilogies Month with the Reanimator Trilogy on Monday. And on Friday, Ollie Deitch joins me to talk about Captain America Civil War. Thanks for listening. Creepy and Geeky is a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Please check out morbidlybeautiful.com/podcasts for more great shows. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving the show 5 stars and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Also, please share the podcast on social media to help spread the word. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or at creepyandgeeky.com. Music for the podcast is Gratitude, composed by Jerry Smith. You can follow the podcast on social media at Creepy and Geeky on both Twitter and Instagram. If you'd like to follow me, I'm GeekThulu on Twitter and Blue Sky, and Geek.Thulu on Instagram. You can support the podcast by ordering teas and more on TeePublic or by donating to the coffee page. All of the links are in the show notes. Finally, don't forget, stay creepy.